Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio, the only show that takes a look at the obstacles and opportunities open to small to mid-sized enterprises that manufacture here in America. Brought to you by All Metals and Forge Group, with your hosts, Tim Grady and Lou Wise.
Welcome, everyone, to Manufacturing Talk Radio. We're back on the air this wonderful Tuesday. Lou, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Today's one of those first days of fall up here in New Jersey. A lot of leaf raking and so on. Actually, Saturday, I think they even said they're going to have snow showers. So you down in Atlanta, you don't have to worry about that.
And our guest is from Texas, so he has to worry about it less. But before we introduce him, what's going on in the news?
Well, let me go backwards, give a little talk of our postscript of the last two shows, actually. We went into discussions about quality in manufacturing, which is clearly an understated and underplayed aspect of the manufacturing world. We had Michael Barry from the American Society of Quality on, and his show was so good on the first show that we decided that we needed to carry it over, and we did two shows back to back. One of the important things that Barry brought out to us is that without quality, you don't have a product. And there's two hours of that discussion, plus other aspects of his role in the quality world. Quality has to be a top-down methodology from the president, CEO of a company, right down to the shipping dock. And I strongly suggest that our listeners listen to our show S2-16 and S2-17. It was the last two shows. Really good stuff. As far as the news is concerned, it's something that actually came out just yesterday. It's hot. It's about manufacturing. AP reported it with the story that our President Obama has announced executive actions to focus, finally, on manufacturing. Major push is in the following areas where there's $150 million has been dedicated to the Department of Commerce to help 10 states for training, apprenticeships, new technology, and such. Another $100 million to the Labor Department, again for apprenticeship, for advanced manufacturing training. NASA Energy and Agriculture was given $300 million to develop new materials for digital manufacturing. The one thing that and this is all great stuff, and unfortunately it's over a 10-year period, so it's sort of a drop in the bucket. But it is interesting that this came out yesterday, just 1 week prior to the midterm elections. You can draw whatever conclusions you would like to off of that. I'm not going to trash anybody in particular. So, Tim, back to you.
Well, thanks, Lou. We don't throw any particular party under the bus. We just throw the whole government under the bus. And I would like to introduce Mr. Tony Bennett, who's president and CEO of the Texas Association of Manufacturers. It's an Austin-based industry trade association representing over 450 member companies. Tony recently returned to Texas Association of Manufacturers, known as TAM, T-A-M, as president following a 33-year career with Temple Inland Incorporated, a former forest products and financial services company that's now part of International Paper. Tony, how are you today?
Great, Tim. Good to be on with you.
Well, we sure appreciate you having you on the show. Why don't you give our listeners kind of a feel for what TAM is and what TAM does, and then we'll start getting into some of the exciting things happening in the great state of Texas.
Sure. TAM was started back in 2005. Most of our members back then, the founding members, of course, were members of the big business trade associations here in Austin and around Texas that did what they could for industry before the legislature, but what we were lacking, we noticed, was really the direct, more strategic policy that really wasn't being taken care of long-term for just manufacturing in the great state of Texas. And there is a diverse sector, all kinds of sectors of manufacturing in Texas, as you might guess. It's not just an oil and gas state, but it's got a lot of things going on. We can talk about some of those. So we decided to resurrect the manufacturing group. It had gone into hibernation somewhat under the auspices of other trade groups, and we felt like we just were being underserved. So I was with Temple Inland at the time, and we put together a group very quickly. And today, well, next year, with the legislative session starting in January, we will celebrate our 10th anniversary as the Texas Association of Manufacturers. And we're now up to 480 member companies. And, of course, we've got a lot going on with the session coming back into town and preparing for that right now, and looking forward to the session. And our session will last from January till the end of May. So, and we only meet every other year, so that gives you an idea of just how much has to get done in that five-month period.
Wow. Now, Tony, what is the impact of manufacturing on the Texas economy, and why is Texas a good place for manufacturing? I understand that Toyota just moved their headquarters to Texas.
Toyota did. We were up in Dallas, actually Plano, which is a suburb of Dallas, just north Dallas, yesterday, and Toyota is moving, consolidating all of its headquarters to the Plano office, and a very exciting time. Governor Perry, of course, was up there, and lots of the legislative members that were involved in that. And so it was a great day to see Toyota finally make that a formal venture up there in Plano. We look forward to working with them. And Toyota is a TAM member. Matter of fact, they were a founding member of the Texas Association of Manufacturers. Manufacturing in Texas today is huge, as you might imagine. We are seeing employment in the manufacturing sector approaching 900,000 jobs. Our average annual pay for manufacturing employees in Texas is $79,000 a year.
Wow.
That's 84% more than the rest of the Texas workforce as far as compensation. We are seeing gross state product from manufacturing at now a level of $211 billion a year. That's with a B to the Texas economy. 95% of all Texas exports are manufactured goods, and we do like to brag. We are the number one exporting state in the U.S., and I believe we've had that distinction for the last 12 years, if I'm not mistaken. And so it is, manufacturing is huge. Just about every sector you can think of is represented in manufacturing in the great state of Texas.
Well, I would go ahead.
Tony, being the number one state, I'm just curious what the percentage of export is, the oil and gas, being that the U.S. is now a net exporter in that sector. Do you know that number?
I do not have that number. You know, a lot of the products from the petrochemical or petroleum liquid used as a raw material, most of the finished products like chemicals, which many of those are created from natural gas, diesel fuel, which is, you know, manufactured at the refineries along the Texas Gulf Coast and some inland, but most of them are on the Texas Gulf Coast, and most of the chemical plants are on the Texas Gulf Coast. So that the ports can readily and efficiently and at a lower cost get those goods all over the world. So the petrochemical industry is huge in Texas, and that provides a lot of related industries that do very well that kind of spin off the petrochemical and the petroleum liquid used as raw material. Those industries do very well here.
With the price of oil either approaching or has already approached $80 a barrel, what is that going to do to the manufacturing sector there, particularly in the areas that you just mentioned?
Well, both natural gas and per barrel price of oil will, hurt some and help others. And the chemical industry, I'm sure, does not mind paying a little bit less for their raw materials. While on the other hand, some of my oil and gas members that also have ventures in exploration and production, sometimes they get a little worried about the lower price of West Texas Intermediate, and they'll make adjustments. No one ever believed that oil would stay at $90 to $100, and it does take its dip here and then, but once the global economy starts back up at full bore, we think we'll see a return to the higher per barrel prices.
I think that there's something that we globally need to do with regards to ISIS, not to get into global politics, but they are selling oil in the Mideast at $25 a barrel. That certainly doesn't help the market price at all. This is something that really needs to be addressed. Otherwise, you're going to wind up seeing a global collapse.
No doubt. No doubt. It's almost piracy. It is piracy in that case.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah, they're clearly selling oil they stole from the oil field they took over. Tony, what is the... what are the challenges that Texas manufacturers face? I know you and I spoke before the show, and you brought up the carbon rule in the EPA. Can you kind of share with our listeners what the challenges are there?
Yes, we can kind of do a local or state level list, and then we can move to the federal realm. But at the state level, manufacturers really have heaven on earth in Texas. Generally speaking, we typically rank number one or number two, maybe number three in just about every poll where you're measuring business friendly environments, and we work very hard to keep it that way here at TAM, and continuously trying to improve that every legislative session. But at the state level, since we don't have a state income tax, and we consider ourselves fortunate that we don't, it does put a little extra pressure on the property tax, for example. If you're a capital-intensive manufacturer, and most manufacturers are capital-intensive, they have, plant property and equipment, and we also have a business inventory or personal property tax that is, part of the ad valorem tax situation in the state. We see a very heavy property tax burden for most manufacturers, and that's not subsiding. It seems to be ever increasing. And so there's always a constant battle to do something about the property tax burden on heavy industry and even the small to medium-sized industries. Members that are in TAM will tell you that it's a major concern. How can we continue to see these escalations in ad valorem taxes? So that's a concern. And again, I mentioned that Texas is only one of 11 states in the U.S. that has a business inventory property tax, and we're scratching our heads every session to see how we might be able to reform that or even eliminate it. I know we had a bill last session that helped one very critical sector of our economy, the aerospace aviation industry, and we need to do more to help that segment. Those are high-paying jobs. They have there's a lot of aerospace and aviation activity going on in Texas and the DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth area, in Houston, of course, and we've had a couple of announcements recently with SpaceX and other space and you know, aerospace related industries coming to the state, which is great, but we still need to do more in the area of getting rid of those impediments that are preventing even more growth in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, you know, a workforce skills gap is still something of a challenge in Texas. We've got, you know, very incredible growth in the manufacturing sector, but we do have certain skills that are hard to find, and not just welders and not just pipe fitters, but all kinds of skills across the spectrum, even engineers that we, you know, like most areas in the U.S., engineers are hard to find and in high demand. We also have a lengthy environmental permit process here. Texas is one of very few states that has a court-like, trial-like process to get an environmental permit. And most states do not. The EPA doesn't even require that kind of process. So we have our challenge with the Texas legislature to see if we can streamline the environmental permit process so that it doesn't take twice as long as some of our neighboring states, like Louisiana and Oklahoma, that can get an environmental permit for a manufacturer much more quickly. And then the water and transportation infrastructure challenges remain. We're a very fast-growing state. The drought has magnified the problem of water infrastructure inadequacy here. And then, of course, we can't build highways and rails and ports and airports fast enough to keep up with the growth. So all those are statewide, state-level impediments.
So, Tony, what percentage, if there is such a thing, of percentage, is our governments, either state or federal, really impeding the growth of our economy, either state or national? I know the EPA is not particularly business-friendly, maybe one of the most disliked government organizations in the country. It sounds as though Texas has their issues as well. Any comments on that?
You bet. At the federal level, you know, the Obama administration and their EPA, it's been an absolute disaster to trying to have, you know, provide growth and an opportunity for Texas manufacturers, as all states' industry has witnessed over the last six years. And we look forward to a change in the administration, because that's the only way we're going to get any hope of relief. You know, business likes certainty. If you don't have certainty, you cannot make long-term plans. You cannot invest capital wisely. You can't hire people. And the present EPA has put layer upon layer upon layer of ridiculous and unrealistic regulation on Texas industries to the point where, you know, many of our industries are, you know, throwing their hands up until we have an administrative change, and they're basically burrowing down, and where they can't litigate their way out of it and buy time with filing lawsuits against the federal government, fortunately with the help of our attorney general here and our governor. They're just biding time until things get better.
That's almost tragic. I want to come back to this, and particularly I want to come back to the carbon rule, Tony, but we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back for our listeners with Manufacturing Talk Radio and Tony Bennett, president of the Texas Association of Manufacturers.
Manufacturing Talk Radio will be right back.
American Crane and Equipment Corporation in Douglasville, Pennsylvania is a leader in specialized cranes, hoists, and material handling equipment for industries including aerospace, nuclear, oil and gas, transit, construction, and waste handling. Call 877-877-6778 or visit AmericanCrane.com. That's AmericanCrane.com or 877-877-6778.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. Buy 3 with triple points on airfare. Buy 2 with double points on gas and groceries. And a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over 1 million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit AXPGold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at AXPGold.com.
All Metals and Forge Group is an ISO 9001 AS and EN 9100 manufacturer of open die forgings and seamless rolled rings in alloy, carbon, stainless and tool steels, aluminum, copper, titanium, and nickel alloys. Visit us at steelforge.com or call 800-600-9290.
Welcome back to Manufacturing Talk Radio.
And we are back with Tony Bennett, president of the Texas Association of Manufacturers, and my co-host, Lou Weiss of All Metals and Forge Group, who is also our show sponsor. I'm Tim Grady. And, Tony, I want to talk to you about the carbon rule. What's the story on the carbon rule?
Well, we believe... that it is simply an attack on the coal plants that generate electricity and on ultimately the fossil fuel industry, and ultimately trying to level the playing field, in our opinion, of how expensive it is for renewable energy to make it in a fossil fuel electric generating world. And if this rule passes in the form that it's in today, it will, in our opinion, allow solar and wind power to compete more much more better with the natural gas and with the coal industry generated electricity. That's our opinion.
Well, I think what I'm hearing and looking at this a little ourselves, that what the government is trying to do is pile dirt on the coal and fossil fuel industry. So the leveling of the field means raising the level of the field, because wind power and solar power are going to be more expensive forms of electricity generation, are they not, Tony?
They are considerably more expensive when you calculate all that you need to calculate to determine what is the delivered cost of that kilowatt or megawatt. In Texas, you know, we have a diverse source of generation. We are huge generators from wind power. If you drive out to West Texas, you'll see thousands upon thousands of the wind towers that are providing good pricing for energy. You do have to calculate what it cost us at billions of dollars with a B to provide the CREZ transmission lines that run way out to West Texas to bring that power into Houston or into the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And so you have to calculate that. And then, of course, on solar is still a very expensive form of energy. TAM members believe that we need all sources of generation, all sectors of energy and electricity power generation, and we like to see all of them compete on their own and within the marketplace, a free market, and we think the government is trying to put their thumb on the scales here.
I would agree. We would all like to see solar energy come down in price. We'd all love to have solar panels on our rooftop and generate enough solar electricity that we could sell back to the grid, and that would be a nice position to be in. But I would agree that the government, you know, the intention's good. The approach is dead wrong, I'm afraid. And I think that's going to hurt even the homeowner. The electric bill for the homeowner has got to go up if they put the carbon rule in place the way it's written today. Let's talk for a minute. I'm sorry, Tony. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that the EPA does admit that the carbon rule will drive electricity prices higher. We think they're way off on their estimate. It will be considerably higher. And that will make, of course, my member companies much, much less competitive in a global economy.
Well, if they're anywhere near as off as they were on the Affordable Care Act and premiums on health insurance policies, we're going to get crushed. Let's change topics for a minute, because you gave out a figure of the average compensation for the almost 900,000 Texans working in the manufacturing sector of almost $80,000 a year. I mean, what a great number. That's a nice income for people. How are manufacturing careers different today, Tony, than they were 30 years ago?
They're much more sophisticated. They do require a year or two, sometimes more, of training and certification. They are much more technical. I think you can understand that even in the industry where I came from, which was forest products, I recall when we first put in the laser computer high-tech system that looked at a log, a southern pine log running across the sawmill, and the laser in milliseconds would determine and feed the information to the computer to determine what products were going to be cut out of that log, how many 2x4s, 2x6s, 2x8s, what lengths, all in an effort to maximize the return on investment of that log, and then what volume of wood chips and sawdust and bark would fall into other hoppers to power the mill and to make particle board at the mill next door, et cetera. You know, technology is everywhere in manufacturing. You don't just walk into the plant and start using it. And we need people that have good sense and good work ethic, and manufacturers are willing to pay to keep those folks, and they are very valuable, and consequently a career in manufacturing is a phenomenal way to go today for young people.
Tony, the report that I was talking about earlier, the presidential U.S. Advanced Manufacturing Report, which just came out within the last week or so, it had been stated, and the consensus was that in manufacturing there were about 600,000 vacant jobs with not a lot of people filling those jobs. According to this new report, they've now come out with the number stating that that number is now 312,000 openings in manufacturing, nearly half of what it was about a year and a half ago. So we are doing something right. There are many training programs that are beginning to open up. Manufacturing Day, which was October 3rd, which is now designated the official Manufacturing Day in the United States, they had over 100,000 people cross-country involved in that that event, and about 1,500 companies. So the government and associations are really pushing to ramp this country up again in terms of employment and new skill sets. I don't know about the gray hairs. I think the gray hairs are just beginning to retreat into their rocking chair, but. But we do have a lot of youngsters coming out of school with big college tuitions that they have to pay, which is another topic for us to discuss probably on another show, and how they're going to pay those bills. But I guess at an $80,000, $90,000 manufacturing job, you can ultimately pay them off. Tim?
And Tony, I know that Texas has been doing things very right. Why don't you share with our listeners the HB5 education reform bill that's percolating in the legislature?
You bet. That bill did pass last session in 2013. We were astounded that we were able to get the reforms done in one session. We thought it would be a multi-session, at least a decade-long process to turn the education system around. But basically what House Bill 5 did, and we're implementing it as we speak, it creates five endorsements, or what I'd like to call, different degrees in high school, where kids can already begin to shape their what direction in their career they want to go. I hope I can name all five of the endorsements, but the two most important ones for manufacturing are the business and industry endorsement. That's one. And then you have the STEM endorsement, science, technology, engineering, and math, where many of the kids will go on to become engineers or something along the lines of probably a four-year degree, but not necessarily. And then you've got the other three degrees, or other three endorsements, I should say, are there's a public service endorsement, there's an arts and humanities endorsement, and I believe the fifth one is an interdisciplinary endorsement, which is a hybrid of all. So it allows, hopefully, in the case of business and industry endorsement, what we're hoping to see is that the kids, after they've done their basic English and social studies, they may drive their own car or bus over to a junior college, community college, or even four-year university, and continue their high school education and credits with a dual credit situation, where they take a course at the community college that would provide the high school and also some college credit in a career or technology type instructional setting. And that may even allow them to graduate high school with an internationally recognized certificate, you know, for example. And they could maybe start work once they're out of even high school with Southwest Airlines, working on jets, or start with Lockheed Martin like many of the kids in San Antonio do, and also attend Alamo College. And some of those kids have gone on to work out of high school and continuing their education provided by the employer, paid for by the employer, and end up, you know, being engineers and managers for many of these companies that I've mentioned.
Well, I know that you know, there's a couple of disconnects with either kids not knowing that the jobs exist or they have a misconception. You've been doing symposiums in Texas. Is that TAM that's doing those symposiums, Tony?
Well, it's through TAM is part of the symposiums through our Jobs for Texas Coalition, which is the chemical industry, the petrochemical industry, I should say, the manufacturers, the contractors, et cetera, the home builders. We have one coalition that helped to pass House Bill 5 and continuing to implement it. And it's the first time that I've ever seen a couple of hundred folks gather in one large room that were from industry, higher education, public education, the grade schools, the Texas Workforce Commission, and legislators and, you know, state government, all in one room talking about how can we get our kids better prepared for college and career, and equal emphasis on career. Because obviously not all kids are going to go to college, not all kids have to go to college to make a very good living with very high wages and benefits and an opportunity for advancement. Certainly want to see kids continue to go to four-year universities, and we need engineers, we need directors and higher level managerial positions filled with competent people, but we also need folks that know how to run a multi-million, multi-billion dollar plant. And we need every kind of skill set you can imagine in Texas, and our members strongly support any and all efforts to get folks better prepared for all of these levels of job opportunities.
Tony, that being said, I'm going to take a little left turn on you here. Over the next 2 years, there's going to be more than 400,000 veterans leaving the service. Is Texas doing anything to try and capitalize on the governmental investment in these people who did learn very specific skill sets? And is there a way to transition those skill sets into a manufacturing environment?
Absolutely. We did attend. We've had a few meetings here in the state, and TAM has been assisting any way we can with this. The governor called for a program called Fast Start, which basically fast tracks some of the experiences that our veterans have, and they have a lot of experience in a lot of areas that can easily be transmitted into a work skill that can be used by the refining industry, the chemical industry, the aerospace industry, our plastics industries, the oil field, you name it. They come ready and willing and with excellent work ethic. They actually show up on time and they make a very good employee in the manufacturing world, and the Texas Workforce Commission and the community colleges and state government here is working wholeheartedly trying to move these men and women into jobs as soon as they land at Fort Hood and get released, you know, and all the other forts that are here in the state. We're ready for them and doing our best to get them into a good career in the private sector.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because they certainly are deserving of our interest and concern. Absolutely.
So Toyota mentioned that yesterday, how many tens of thousands of veterans they have been able to move into their employment, and we were all very proud to hear that.
Well, Tony, we're going to take another commercial break here, and when we come back, I'd like to talk to you about a couple of things that have come up in conversation. One is the work ethic. Another is the misconception about manufacturing jobs in the United States. But we'll have a quick commercial break, and then we'll come back to those subjects with our guest, Tony Bennett, of the Texas Association of Manufacturers, here on Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Manufacturing Talk Radio will be right back.
All Metals and Forge Group manufactures open die forgings in blocks, hubs, shafts, flanges, cylinders, gear blanks, and custom forge shapes, including seamless rolled rings in alloy, carbon, stainless and tool steels, aluminum, nickel alloys, copper and titanium for parts and assemblies in aerospace, oil and gas exploration, defense, machinery, transportation, shipbuilding, energy and power, pulp and paper, and many other industries. Visit steelforge.com or call 800-600-9290.
It's no secret that manufacturers are having trouble filling jobs. Now, with ThomasNet's new job board, help is on the way. For manufacturers, ThomasNetJobs.com is the go-to resource to recruit new talent. Post your jobs and get in front of thousands of potential employees. Or, if you're looking for a new job or you want to reinvent yourself, ThomasNetJobs.com offers exciting opportunities from the shop floor to the C-suite in supply chain management, engineering, production, or sales. Remember, ThomasNetJobs.com.
Welcome back to Manufacturing Talk Radio.
We're back with Tony Bennett of the Texas Association of Manufacturers. And Tony, before the break, I mentioned some of the biggest misconceptions about manufacturing, and I want to have you tie into your answer a concern that I think not just the gray hairs have, but even the folks over 35 in manufacturing have with work ethic, which I hear come up repeatedly. So give us kind of a read of what you're hearing from your members on, you know, some of the misconceptions about manufacturing and where they see the work ethic today.
Well, manufacturing jobs, you know, in the past were, you know, it was just the stereotypical hard hat, lunch bucket type stereotype that we are still today challenged to get out of the heads of not only kids today, but even their parents, the school counselors, teachers, public opinion leaders, that, you know, folks are still just now learning that today's manufacturing plant and today's manufacturing worker is high tech, sophisticated, and an incredible, you know, 180 from what happened 40 and 60 years ago. And so we continue to be challenged by that, and we must educate and reboot you know, folks out there that can have an influence on whether or not somebody even remotely gets interested in joining the manufacturing workforce. So that remains a challenge, but I think we will achieve what we're trying to get done there, and we're optimistic that we can turn folks around. And many times it takes just one visit to a manufacturing plant that is operating today, and minds change rapidly.
I think that's right. Now, I know that you also expect a lot of construction in the state of Texas, say, over the next 10 years. How's the labor shortage going to affect that, Tony?
We are expecting tens of billions of dollars in new plant expansion and construction. Probably the largest share of that coming from the shale oil and gas boom that we're seeing down in South Texas with Eagle Ford and reworking the Permian Basin oil fields of West Texas. And there's no end in sight for the surplus of petroleum liquids that will be flowing to plants all across the state via pipeline and truck transport and rail, bringing all of these petroleum liquids to the various plants that take those. Take the raw material and make it into plastics, chemicals, or power their own plants to make a host of products that are exported all over the world. Does that answer your question? Or you?
Just a side comment, Tony. I remember 30, 40 years ago, the expectation was that we had about 30, 40 years of oil left. And now
right.
Your comment about there's no end in sight is refreshing to hear. So thank you for that.
True. We're hearing that there's now a 100-year supply of reserves. And here in the last few years, the various operators that are in the Eagle Ford or the Tuscaloosa Marine Shale or the Klein Shale or the Permian Basin, they're now saying there are other levels of oil fields that they were not aware of. And so we can see where this oil boom can go on for decades, not to mention the Mexican government trying to rewrite their constitution so that they can have the same activity south of the Rio Grande, which will help the U.S. and the Mexican economy and North America, generally speaking. So it's pretty exciting to see this. And, Tim, I think you asked what the impact would be on on employment and the availability of workers. And that remains to be seen, but it is hard to get workers. We've heard stories of even restaurant workers in Midland, Texas, being paid a bonus to come to work, you know, in a restaurant. And the lack of housing availability for workers and, these folks having to live in trailers and man camps and woman camps and it's like a gold rush almost. It's exciting, but it does bring its challenges. But I think we'll figure out ways of taking care of these challenges.
I think that we need to bring Franklin Roosevelt back to bring back the WPA to help build our infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, our dams, our electric grid, and so on. They're not addressing these issues. And do you have any thoughts on that, Tony?
We are going to have an interesting legislative session dealing with transportation infrastructure in particular this session. We dealt with water infrastructure and how we might finance those things, those sorts of projects. And we'll, of course, that will continue this session. But We're very much behind on building and modernizing and keeping up with the repair work needed on our roads and bridges in Texas. There's no doubt it's true across the country. But with the very, very fast growth of 1,000 people moving every day to the state of Texas, we are strangling our larger cities, and the cost of doing nothing is overwhelming to our citizens and our businesses and our logistics networks. We have got to keep up and catch up with our highway infrastructure in our state, and we hope to make great headway with that issue this session.
Another issue that really isn't spoken about on a national level to any great degree, but I've heard a lot about it down in Texas, and that's about your drought, and which is now going on, I think, 3 years. Happy anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you're so close to water, how come desalination has not become a big buzzword and a big technology for not only the Texas, but the West Coast, California, and so on? It's been proven in the Mideast, in Israel, for example. That country survives on desalination plants. And I know it's expensive, but it works. And that would certainly be a good place to put some of our workers and train them into that whole manufacturing process.
Very true, Lou. We can already see some development in that area specifically, for example, in the Corpus Christi area, where water is very, very much in short supply, but there's huge industries, chemical and refining industry in the Corpus Christi area. And leaders down there are looking at desal as the opportunity. They've been looking at the San Diego project in Southern California. They have been studying the possibility, since desal, really the cost is really an energy cost to make the water potable. Just the energy cost alone is what makes it so expensive. So maybe with our electricity generation needs, we might be able to combine both a natural gas generation plant with a desal project and make it even cheaper when the plant really isn't needed to run electrons through the wire. Maybe it can be used to clean salt water. And that could be seawater, or it could be the brackish groundwater that the oil and gas industry deals with on a daily basis. So that all of this is being looked at for economically palatable answers to both the water supply issue and also the electricity power grid issue, maybe combining those two. I think you're going to see advancement in that area in Texas.
Well, I know there's 1,000 people moving into Texas a day. That used to be a California bragging statistic. They may be coming from California as California tries to dig themselves out of a monstrous hole, and they're taxing their manufacturers probably to the point where they're headed to Texas as well. Do you see any migration happening that you can actually document, Tony?
There is a lot of California folks moving here. Right here in Austin alone, a lot of California technology folks are moving here. I think we're going to continue to see that. No doubt the same manufacturing factory in California, if it were able to afford to lock, stock, and barrel and move here in Texas, their profit margins would increase, in our opinion, dramatically just on the tax rate alone. And there was some talk about what employees at Toyota would see, for example, in the way of a raise just by going from California to the great state of Texas where there's no personal income tax. So, you know, both the businesses and the individuals moving here, not to mention the fact that housing is significantly cheaper here if you're coming from west to east to Texas. So there's a big difference, and folks are realizing it once they get here, and they're pleasantly surprised.
Does Texas have similar programs like North Carolina and South Carolina offering tax abatements and no taxation on profits and no taxation on property and so on for those companies that move from point A to the southern states? I know
we do. We have a myriad of incentives and abatements, and we can put together a very nice package for, depending on what the industry is and the size of the industry, the state leadership has made it a priority to make sure that we remain competitive with tax incentives and relocation incentives. Some of those incentives will be questioned and possibly reformed somewhat this legislative session, 2015. There are those that would like to label it corporate welfare and crony capitalism and all those cute little phrases. And, you know, we do need transparency. We do need an audit of some of these. If we have a clawback provision in some of these incentives and the deal is made on how many jobs you will create, et cetera, and in return you'll get, you know, the tax breaks, et cetera, and those things don't happen, then any reasonable person would understand that there would be clawback provisions. So those sorts of things need to be looked at, but Texas definitely needs to have a competitive economic development package, and we don't need to throw all of our tools out. I don't expect that to happen, but I do expect transparency and some audit provisions to be added to some of our incentive programs, and we do have quite a few that are allowing us to stay competitive.
Glad to hear that. And New York State, for example, has started a very proactive program back about less than a year ago. And you can't watch television in the New York area without seeing something put out by the state government about the same topic.
We see it down here.
Is that right?
We see those spots down here. Yes, they're being very aggressive, and many states are. Louisiana, our neighbor to the east, Governor Bobby Jindal has done a very good job keeping his state in the running in the horse race of attracting these major plants and facilities that bring thousands of jobs and lots of capital and tax wealth to his state. So he's given us a run for the money, but I think we're able to keep up with him pretty well.
Well, Tony, we would sure like to thank you for being a guest on the show today. You shared a lot of terrific information with our listeners, and we appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to be our guest.
Glad to do it, and I've enjoyed it very much, Tim and Lou.
Terrific. And Lou?
Yeah, I'd like to just mention to some of our listeners who may have tuned in late that within 30 minutes, this show will be on Podbean and iTunes and mfgtalkradio.com, and you can listen to the whole show at that time. And Tim, I just want to say goodbye for the day. And Tony, thank you very much for an extremely informative story about what's going on down in Texas. We wish you well.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And that wraps us up for Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Thanks for joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio. You can hear our next broadcast each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at mfgtalkradio.com.